Everyone, welcome back to Dad Space, you know, the podcast for dads by dads, and I have yet another dad with me, which is great. So I'm not here by myself looking at an empty monitor. Dan Roth is with me, and Dan's here to share a little bit about his dad story, about his two amazing girls, and give us some insight from another dad. So, hey, Dan, thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure, you betcha. Happy to be here today.
It's great. So, Dan, tell everybody where you are in this big world of ours. Come on, man.
So, I am coming to you from San Diego, although I never call myself a Californian. I grew up in the East Coast and Jersey, very proud Jerseyan. Moved out here about 13 years ago, met my wife, and the rest was history. Now we got the twin 4.5-year-old girls and living life.
Good. Amazing. So we connected for Dad Space to have you come on and share your dad's story. As a dad, fellow dad to dad here for now, what kind of resources have you found in podcasting and content that you find help support you as a dad? Are you hearing a lot of it out there? Do we need more of it? Kind of selfishly asking the question, by the way.
Really interesting question, because I was that dad that read every book ahead of time. And I, because you just being completely transparent, being ADHD myself, I was worried about being a father because I knew what the idiosyncrasies I was dealing with were, and I didn't want that to come into play as a father. So I was really, really scared. And what you know is that neither my wife nor I had twins on either side of our family. So we were expecting one, we get two pop out. So I read every single book. What I realized from the get-go was that all those books went out the window, and there was a lot more intuitive behavior and intuitive adaptation once the girls were born. The only thing I will never claim to have gotten correct is swaddling. That I was never able to get it like real tight, and it, but you know, so, but when you, to answer your question directly, I don't think I ever searched them out. Like, I went into the dad groups on Facebook, but the dad groups are so crazy. The only thing that beats them is the mom groups, which, like, I never thought mom groups would be crazier than dad groups, but everything I've heard from my wife, that's like, you know, I'm going to age myself a little bit, but mom groups are the equivalent of the Richard Bay show, for anybody that remembers that.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good picture.
Yeah. the people that get that one are really going to get a kick out of it. The people that don't are going to have no idea. But yeah, I mean, I think for some dads, it's really beneficial to have some of the stuff out there. For me, I just had to roll with it and figure out what I was doing. I mean, I was also that dad that after my wife pumped, like, I wanted to cover for her during the night because she got a C-section. So I would start drinking coffee at 9 p.m. at night and have 5 cups of coffee by 6 a.m. Just to feed the girls. And then my wife, after 2 or 3 days, was like, "Dan, you know you're useless the rest of the day, right? There's a trade-off." And these are the things that I had to learn over time. I'll tell you a funny story before we continue, though. And my wife will never let me live this down. So I was so afraid of poop and changing diapers that I actually, and I wish I would have gotten it for you today, I took about 17 boxes of gloves home from the hospital, and I went and I bought a welder's mask and I got a raincoat. So my wife, the first time she asked me to change my daughter's diaper, I said, "Okay, I got to go out to the garage for a second." 5 minutes later, I come back in. She's like, "Where were you?" And she sees me and I have a welder's mask on, gloves, and this rain jacket. And I'm like, "I'm ready."
Look like Darth Vader coming in.
Yeah, in because like you always hear the horror stories about getting peed or pooped on, and I'm like, this is not going to happen to me. This is absolutely not. And like, a lot of people tell you boys shoot straight up when they go to the bathroom. Well, girls do. Yeah. So do girls. So do girls. Now, the worst part about that was that I actually continued doing that and I wore gloves for the first 6 months. But that face mask was not a one-time
thing. There you go. The properly equipped dad ready to go into battle. One thing my wife did to me, she likes to play tricks. And when my youngest, my oldest was born, he was like the newness of all this. She was upstairs changing him. And she came down the stairs after putting him to bed, and I'm sitting on the couch and she's coming down the stairs and she's licking her fingers. And there's stuff on her fingers and she's licking them. It's a chocolate bar that she kind of rubbed on her hands after she cleaned up and everything, but she wanted to freak me out. So she rubbed some chocolate candy bar on her hand and she's licking her fingers. And I'm like, downstairs, like, what are you doing? So she just loved that. That was her moment to get me back for all my practical jokes. She did that to me. Incredible. Isn't that really, isn't that mean? I want her to hear this. That's mean, right, Dan?
If I were to call it mean, then that would mean that I'm a hypocrite because that's something I would do to my wife. So I can't take your side on this one just because for that exact reason. Now, my wife would never do that. If she did, I probably would have gagged. But
that's terrible, right? Yeah. So I appreciate support me in that. I don't understand why, but it's just pretty funny that was her mentality in the moment. Hey, I'm going to get my husband back. So.
I give your wife a lot of credit. My wife is very much the introvert of our family. And here's how she got me back. So in these mom groups, they throw out all these different ideas for products. And one of these products was called Baby Bling Bows. And I didn't understand it. But what they are is $14 bows that go with all these outfits. But they were really smart. This company decided to put them out a small amount at a time and get women to need to be there at a certain time to purchase them. So they would open this up and they would only have a certain amount. So 8 a.m., I'm seeing my wife and three other parents that are in the same age group, all like, okay, well, you do this and you do this and we'll bid and then we'll figure it out and we'll get all this stuff. And I'm sitting there like, this is a $14 bow that my child doesn't care about because she doesn't know what it is. But the part that was getting me back is that eventually I counted. She has over 250 bows that my children never wear.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there like, and I'm telling you, these go on resale. Like people sell them on eBay. They're $14 bows. They, depending on the one, they'll sell for like $150, $200. Like every other day there was a box of these showing up. That was payback because look, I can waste money like the best of them, but there has to be a point to the wasting money. And I'm like, she's like, these are for the girls. No, BS. This is for you. Let's not put this on the girls. That's an excuse. This is for you. My God. Now I'm sitting here with two huge cases of them upstairs. What are we going to do with these? Even beanie babies don't have value anymore. What makes you think that this is going to appreciate?
Yeah. Sounds like you have a future store idea there, Dan. You can open a store and sell them.
No, I will have nothing to do with them. If I do anything, I'm going to this is a bit dark, but if I do anything, then I'm going to be taking them to a bonfire.
There you go. I love it. Yeah. So yeah, we, as dads and parents, we do all kinds of weird things when we're trying to figure this all out. And I think the big thing that got me for my first, when we walked out of the hospital for the first time, for you, double this, but you walk out of the hospital and nobody follows you home. Nobody checks on you to see if you're being a good parent. They wave at you goodbye from the nurse's station and you just leave. And you're like, okay, so we've gone from like super great care here in the hospital as the baby was born. And, you know, you guys helped me learn how to change a diaper and do the swaddle thing and all that. Great. But no one comes with me. Like, I would love for you, all this whole hospital wing, to come with me, all the nurses, the doctors. I don't know if I'm good at being a dad yet, because I've never done this before. And just that moment of crossing the doorway out of the hospital to the parking lot, carrying your newborns for you, that's just a weird feeling to know that my family, which was just the two of us, is now the three or four of us for you guys. Overnight, your whole world changes, and mentally you kind of wrestle as a dad going, okay, how do I show up now? Like, what's my job title? What are my responsibilities with all of the changes that have happened in the last 24 hours? My life is completely different. And I think I personally struggled a lot with my identity in that moment because I didn't know who I was anymore. I knew who I was when I was single. I knew who I was when I was in a relationship with my wife, as we were dating and all that. But now I'm in another part of my life. I have no context except for what I've seen in the past from others. I don't know if I'm going to be good at this. And I felt really scared that I would screw this up somehow.
I was the opposite of you.
Really?
In a number of capacities. So first, you know, growing up as somebody that was bullied, as somebody with ADHD and depression, I always thought that parenting would be the one thing I was good at. And I had incredible role models. But bigger than that, my children were my why. And part of that, and this is, I have to acknowledge this for those watching, and because this may be triggering. I've disclosed this to you previously. I almost lost my wife right after childbirth. So for me, what I knew I was going to be a good dad. I didn't know how good a dad I was going to be. But what I struggled with was the fact that I had, and to give a little bit of context, because this may seem, I want to provide that context. So after my wife had a C-section, after that was over, we went back into the recovery room and my wife wouldn't stop bleeding. The doctor that did the C-section had already gone to sleep because they were on a 24-hour shift. And all of a sudden they started making all these phone calls. I didn't know what was going on. Then they wheel her out. They don't tell me anything. So for 4 hours, I had no idea what was going on. And it was and I'm not religious, but it's as close to a come to Jesus moment as you're going to hear. And it was in those moments I had to think about, you know, if something happens,
wow,
am I going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to raise these twins on my own. And it's this big picture thinking of, is the world equipped for my girls? What is waiting 3, 5, 10 years from now? And in that moment, I realized that my life was going to be dedicated to creating a better world for my children. So right at that moment, it gave me a why. But going back to what you were talking about, the other benefit that we had was that we were very lucky to be gifted 2 weeks of an overnight doula. So we had somebody that came in every night to feed the girls and take care of them and change them, which was great because it allowed my wife, who was recovering from the surgery, to get sleep. But also this is somebody that had been through it and had been through a rough pregnancy like my wife had. So I did have somebody that was able to really help me adjust and understand what I could be doing better, what I wasn't. And I was asking a lot of questions. Where I had the real issue wasn't in figuring out my identity. My identity was built within those 4 hours of not knowing. Wow. But my issue was I suffered from PTSD and I still have nightmares about my wife nearly dying. And the entire reason that we never tried to have kids again, aside from the fact we're in a horrible society where money's tight, is that as much as of a reward as another child would be, the idea of losing my wife is a non-starter. It's a non-starter. She's the reason I am. So I wound up having PTSD and burnout from everything because, again, my wife had a rough pregnancy, so it wasn't like I had 9 months to relax. She was dealing with hyperemesis and gestational diabetes and preeclampsia. So it was this constant daily where we're going to infusions and doing all this different kind of stuff to keep her in the best health that she could. So when the girls finally came, it was, I don't want to say I was more prepared, but I hadn't had that like relaxed time. It was very much. Now, where I had the sort of loss of identity was recently, because when my daughter started, when Haley, who's my youngest, started, and it was about 1 minute, started school, she's going to school 3 days a week. And then Brooklyn, who's autistic, we finally got her IEP set up and she started just about 2 weeks ago. Now I am going from somebody that for essentially four years was their every moment caretaker, especially during the pandemic, to having even a couple of hours for free. And yes, during this entire period of time, I up-leveled. Like where I went from when my girls were born to now, like I went from this person that had no idea who they were, what they wanted to do. Now I've spoken in over 35 countries and I'm doing some really incredible stuff. But central to all that was spending that time with the kids, and I got used to doing it with them there. I can't tell you how many podcasts my daughter would streaked behind me naked until I figured out how to lock the door properly. but like, this is where I've had sort of this identity crisis, because this is what I've been best at. Like, so what do I do with that time? How do I, because before I had an excuse. If I wasn't able to get stuff done, well, I'm watching the kids. Now there's no excuses. Now there's, well, why haven't you found a job? Why hasn't your business taken off? When, now that you have the time, there's all these questions that come into play, and that's the hard part. And again, I still deal with PTSD. I wake up in night sweats, thinking about my wife in that moment.
Well,
I ran on for a lot, but hopefully.
Dan, that's amazing. I love that you're willing to share that, first of all. And the one thing that I found interesting when we chatted before today, we got together and kind of talked about our episode together and planning this out, is I'm an uncle to two autistic girls. They're now in their late teens, early 20s. But growing up, I didn't understand my role as an uncle, seeing these girls randomly, you know, a few times a year here and there. I could see differences and changes in them, but I didn't have the bond with them of seeing them on a constant basis, of having them in my home. And I want to be a great uncle for these girls, knowing how to show up for them and what they need from me whenever I do have a chance to interact with them. And I learned so much from parents who have children on the spectrum, and they can give me some wisdom and knowledge about how their home functions and what they do around their home that makes things better for their kids. So I'm really interested for the parents listening who are maybe early on in the diagnosis and finding out that maybe one of their children has autism and they have more questions than they have answers. And they're coming here going, I saw it in the title, so I'm here. And I'd love to know something from your perspective as a parent, what you could say to them, especially early on, early days when they find out, and what they can do right away to make their home the best place possible.
The first thing I always have to tell people is that it's okay to be scared. You know, going in and finding out that your child has has challenges that they have to deal with is a terrifying experience. And the stigma behind autism and mental health disorders is such that we go in thinking the worst. And so for anybody listening, please feel comfortable sitting in that and don't feel bad for having those feelings, because it's natural, it's intuitive. And you don't want to create extra stress and extra pressure on yourself thinking you're doing something wrong. by having those feelings. I'll tell you something though. Both my children were tested for autism and both of them were diagnosed. The Haley, I took to the doctor and I realized that the timing of the appointment was right in her nap period and she wasn't showing what I knew. I rejected the diagnosis. My wife took Brooklyn and it was with a different doctor. I did not like the first doctor. And Jen accepted, my wife Jen accepted the diagnosis. And it was because there's a lot of opportunity for support by the state, Easter Seals, the regional centers, so on and so forth. So for those that are for those that are just finding out, please know that there's a ton of resources, whether it's community groups or otherwise. And for instance, Brooklyn was allotted, got tested, was allotted 32 hours where we have an ABA, which I forget the exact acronym for, come in and they would work with her and figure out different ways to get her to communicate. And so she was getting consistent support and it was at no cost to us. And that really helped accelerate her growth. And from a very early point, there is that support. However, the other component of that is, and perhaps this is the biggest lesson that Brooklyn taught me, is that you can never, and this is going to sound like a broken record, but you can't judge a book by its cover. I came into it scared, worried, the whole nine yards. And it got to a point where I was sitting watching her with the ABA workers. And all of a sudden I realized I don't have to worry anymore because the strides that she was making were so incredible that I'm like, you know, she may learn things slower. She may learn things differently, but that doesn't mean she's not going to be able to have a fulfilling, happy life. And that was a huge weight off my back. So again, if you're watching this, a diagnosis does not mean it's the end of the world. And it's just how you choose to look at it and how you should handle it. Now, if you're asking, you know, as an uncle inside the home, it's very individual. I would say you got to talk to their parents because, like, Brooklyn really loves music and she really loves sensory. So having like a little sensory station that you could pop out whenever they come over and have that texture is a real big thing. Other kids need quiet time and sort of a safe space. The biggest thing I recommend is you don't treat the child differently just because they have a diagnosis. You can still be supportive and provide them what they need without alienating.
Yeah,
because they do understand. So yeah, they may need help, but that doesn't mean, but don't alienate and don't make that assumption. So, you know, if the child is 4 with autism, don't go to the child and go goo goo gaga.
That's
not going to work. But you know, have that discussion.
Yeah. I had a dad on the Dad Space podcast here and his daughters have autism as well. And he said one of the things that he learned as a dad was that one of his daughters couldn't express or didn't realize why it was important to express love in touch and in words, because it seemed foreign to her that you need to know that I love you. It just like, it doesn't add up and I don't need to touch you because I can't, doesn't make sense to her that that's how you show and demonstrate love. So what she does for her dad is she knows that her dad loves acorns, little acorns that she would see on her walk to and from school. And her dad mentioned that he loved acorns. So what she does for her dad is every time she walks to school and walks home, she fills her pockets with acorns and gives them to her dad when she gets back from school. And that's her demonstration of love, in that she doesn't hug or doesn't give you loving words that, you know, that might be expected. Her expectation of showing and demonstrating love is a handful of acorns. So while he was on my podcast, he reached behind him in the back and there's this big overflowing bowl of acorns. And he showed it to me on the camera. He's like, this is how much my daughter loves me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, like, do you have to demonstrate love by words? Do you have to demonstrate love by touch? No. It can be a handful of acorns. You know, that's what meant the most to her and how she could express to him how much she loved him. And I'm like, that is such a great visual for any parents to realize that your kids will find their own way to communicate with you and show you what they want to tell you. It might not be the way you're expecting them to demonstrate it, but it's going to come out. They just got to find their way of communicating to you. And as a uncle, I'm like, that made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And even, first of all, that's an extremely emotional example. And thank you for sharing. And if that father is listening, what a wonderful gift to the world your child is. I don't even know where to go from there because it's such, here's where I was going to go. You know, part of this is when it comes to love, and specifically, one of the other aspects that I have to bring up is that a lot of kids are taught about echoing, whether it's through pecs, whether it's through otherwise. And one of the challenges that parents with autism go through is that my daughter, so Brooklyn can echo. If I say, Brooklyn, love, she'll say, love, you. So she could actually say the words. But part of the thought that goes on in the mind of the parent is, does my child really love me, or are they just echoing what I'm saying? And again, this is a natural thought process behavior, but what we're teaching that child to do is at least know the terminology and the language. So, and whether they choose to use it or not, it is really up to the acorn. Mm. It's just about how that child interacts and how they do things. I've always had a really, really tight bond with Brooklyn. I think coming from being someone that is neurodiverse, and I love both my children equally. I don't think I need to mention that, but I was very drawn to Brooklyn, and I understood because I get what it's like to not be able to express yourself the way that you want to. Yeah. And there's a lot of frustration that comes with it. And one of the things that happens with children with autism is that a lot of that frustration is in their lack of ability to communicate. I don't care where on the spectrum they are, they want to be able to express themselves. And when they're not able to, that frustration manifests, whether it's in the form of, you know, my daughter bites her hands and we have to teach her mechanisms for dealing with that, or whether it's throwing a hissy fit or whatever the case may be. There is this manifestation when it comes to communication. And that's the one constant that I've seen in as many parents as I've spoken to, that their child has autism or is on the spectrum or even ADHD. So there's a lot to it.
Yeah. And I think of the parents listening, and maybe their child is nonverbal. And as a parent, when I'm looking back at my kids when they're growing up too, you kind of track their learning by learning words and learning sentences. And that's kind of a measuring stick that we were taught in how to kind of see your children progress. And to have a nonverbal child in your home, I think that can lead to maybe feeling like you're not keeping up with everyone else, with your kids. Maybe you might get frustrated with yourself as a parent. What am I doing wrong? Maybe if your child's undiagnosed, like there's so many things we wrestle with as parents that I just want people to understand that there are people out there to help you. There's people who can come into your life who can teach you the things you don't know as a parent. And going back to me leaving the hospital, I did not know what I did not know. So there was no way for me to know what I don't know. So I'm going to have to learn these things. So if your children are having challenges in front of them that they're working through, you need to partner with somebody who knows what you don't know so that you don't get frustrated, your children don't get frustrated. And that constant cycle of frustration doesn't bring value to your home. It makes everything worse. So having that expert, like you say, come into your home and help your daughter, that's amazing, because you're learning tips and tools that you can use when that person leaves. So as a parent, you can also then reinforce what your kids are learning.
Yeah. And let me say that nonverbal does not mean lacking intelligence. I have to mention that because I want to make sure I verbalize some of the stuff that's not said. But yeah, it's extremely helpful. And you know, it was challenging for us because I'm from the East Coast. My parents live in Florida. My brother-in-law moved up to Washington State. So we really only have my mother-in-law. So we were very limited on who we could actually rely on and support us. So we really had to, well, I'll be honest, our family was very insulated. We were only able to really rely on each other, but we really had to learn to look outward. And the big thing for that was when we started working with our regional center and with the Easter Seals, that's when we really started getting the support we needed. But a lot of times parents don't know where to reach out to or who to reach out to. And at least in the United States, a lot of the services and support systems are individual by state. So there's going to be differences across the board. And having the knowledge, because oftentimes we get so overwhelmed that even if logically we know, hey, let's check Google or something like that, we get so overwhelmed that we're almost frozen. And how do you get past that frozen stage? And then there's the work of actually filling out the stuff. And trust me when I tell you, a lot of this stuff is pages upon pages upon pages of repeating the same stuff over and over and over. But if it gets to the end result that you want, that you need, that's the goal. And the only other thing that I would say with that, because this is something that I'm really big on, is there needs to be the constant awareness when things happen of, is what I'm feeling because of me, or what is best for my child? Like, I could have held my daughter from going into school longer. I could have changed the IEP and gone through that. But is that helping me or is that helping her? So at the end of the day, there needs to be that awareness through each situation where you may think that you're at a disadvantage or you may be hurt by something, but that may not necessarily correlate directly to how your child would interpret or need that service. Because it really is tremendously hard to give up some of that control when you are sort of rightly in the belief that, hey, I'm the one that knows my child the best. Yes, you may know your child the best, but other people have been doing this, as you said, longer, and they're going to be able to support in ways that you can't. And that's not a fault. That's not a fail on your part. That's just, it's actually a success by understanding that and taking the appropriate action.
I love it. So some of the joys of being a dad, what just lights you up as a dad? You wake up in the morning, you put your feet on the floor and you're like, hey, I'm a dad. Like, this is really kind of cool. What are some of the things that for you are just like a joy when you think about your kids, your home? What lights you up as a dad?
Everything.
Nice.
And I know it's, yeah, I know how that sounds, but I've really had to learn throughout my life to live in the moment the best I can. And every morning, so here's how my family works. We, in the morning, I will go and I'll hear my daughters and then I'll open the door. And my daughter, Haley, who's a mama's girl through and through, I make her give me a hug and then she runs and she goes to my wife who's still sleeping and she pushes her. She goes, mama, 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 wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. I take huge joy in that. It's funny as anything to me. The wife doesn't love it. I do. So she does that. And then I go back in and Brooklyn loves to lay in bed. So I'll go and I'll give her a kiss on the cheek when I see her eyes open. And then I see her face light up. I love watching them play on the playground. And right now they're really big into make-believe. Every step they take, everything that they do, it's a tremendous joy. Just the idea of being a dad, understanding that I'm doing everything I can. I'm doing things the right way to ensure that they're growing up in a place of understanding, in a place of compassion. And I'm teaching them that they could be anything that they want to be. And they don't have to abide by traditional gender roles or societal norms, and they could push the pace. These are all things that make me really happy. Yes. There's the only thing I don't like about being a parent is changing poop. that's partly my fault because my children stink.
Yeah.
It's just my entire life, I would never have been able to tell you what makes me happy because my life's been devoted to others. I can say with 100% certainty that the only thing in this world that I know makes me happy is my children.
Nice. Love it. What about for the dads that are going to find out coming up that they're going to be having multiple births? They're going to have 2, 3, 4. How do you, as a dad, I have no twins in my family at all.
Don't faint.
Yeah. So how do you establish identity for the two separate from each other when they come as a group package where you don't treat them like a group, you treat them like who they are individually? That balancing act that you have to do, how did you navigate that early days so that you recognize the identity, the unique qualities of the two of them separately, but then also the package deal that you now have? Because you've gone from the two of you to the four of you overnight.
Yeah.
That's a big change. So how do you do that?
Well, so first of all, I think communication with your spouse is critical. And, you know, so Jen and I had sort of an advantage and a disadvantage. We tried to have kids a couple of years before we did. And then my mother-in-law had cancer. So we had to put it off to take care of her. And she's fine now. So we had thought and talked through a lot of things. And one of the things we both agreed on was that we wanted our children to be independent. Now, at the time, we didn't realize we were having twins, but we wanted them to have their own voice. We don't care about dressing them the same. In fact, we prefer that they don't dress the same. We want to allow them to gravitate towards what they want to gravitate towards. And it's a lot of effort because there are times where you want to make it just easy and get two of everything. And it's like, no, I don't want to do that. If you want to wear pink and you want to wear blue, you know, let's do that. The other thing that I think is really important when having twins is giving them each independent time with each parent. So it's great to be part of a collective, but at the same time, you want to make sure that each child has those special experiences with each one, because while together they're going to see, you know, everybody happy, individually they could learn so much more and feel so much more than they otherwise would be able to. And just having that ability, like even something as simple as going to Target and letting your child pick out toys. Well, if you go both of them, then one may gravitate and say, hey, I want exactly what sister has. But if you take them independently, you get a lot better idea of what they're actually interested in.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So these are a lot of those things that we just don't think about that we want to. I mean, Haley, her first word was shiny and her second word was shoes. By the way, that's when I knew I was screwed. Brooklyn was, you know, in spite of having autism, she was our active one. She was climbing on things from a very early age. She wanted to be doing different stuff, and that's cool. So let them do it. The other thing that's really important to us and other parents may push back on is, like, my wife wanted to keep her last name when we got married. I had no issue with that. That's not a big deal. My kids have a hyphenated last name. It's so, in addition to how you treat your kids, it's the example you set. Daddy's the one that cleans and does dishes and all this other kind of stuff. Mommy's the one that cooks because daddy can't cook. So it's showing them that in our family, I'm Jewish. My wife is not. We raise them with knowledge of all religions. And the reason I bring this up in terms of having your child be individuals is because the more information that you're able to provide without forcing them into one box, is the more their ability, the more ability that they have to actually have a fundamental understanding of these things and then choose exactly where they want to go, where they want to be. And, you know, kids are fickle. You know this. They'll change. They'll change after 5 minutes. So it's just allowing that and having the freedom to for them to be able to express in an environment that isn't pressurized or I don't know the other word I'm trying to say, but you get my
point. I like that you're doing, that's how you're raising your kids. And I think anyone listening who is debating on what kind of path they want to be as a parent, that's a great model, Dan, to kind of follow that guide, because you don't want to raise your kids in a way where they only see the world through one lens, and that's the only lens that they know, because they're going to miss out on such a variety. As I'm talking to you, you got like this colors all over behind you in your backdrop. That's what we need, is that kind of color explosion in life, right? And we want their kids to experience as much as possible. So I love that that's kind of your guide.
What's funny about that is that I'm colorblind. So, but a lot of the backgrounds that I utilize, so everything I do has about 15 layers of depth. And the reason I do it that way is because I want people to see the colors of the autism spectrum or ADHD, and I want them to have that in the back of their heads, because the world is colorful and we have to. The one thing I wanted to make sure that I said before we finish up, and this is such an important point that it is really central to who I am. I didn't know that male postpartum depression existed until I went through it and started showing signs of what I was dealing with. And a lot of it was because my wife had a horrible pregnancy. Yeah. And I really did develop burnout. So if you're out there and you're having kids and you wind up feeling like, not necessarily that you're not emotionally attached to the kids, but that you're just so exhausted and you're getting really depressed, it's worth going to see a therapist and talking about it and seeing how you could best position, because depression and anxiety is not always something that we could treat through medication. We have to be able to understand how to deal with it from a mental and interpersonal capacity. So understanding that you are normal for going through this, and also feeling open to express it. I'm the only guy that I know that talks about being a male with postpartum depression. And that's a problem for me, because if we don't know, then how can we normalize these things for other parents that are going through it? So please, 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 if you feel comfortable, and I would never ask somebody to force them to do this, if you are somebody that's dealing with this, if you are a father that's going through this, please feel comfortable speaking out about it, because I promise you, you're not alone. You're going to get way more support. This is not the old school locker room mentality. Right. This is new school mental health first. And feel free to reach out to me if you want to have those discussions, because I'd rather you come to me than sit in those feelings and have something bad happen.
Yeah. That's a great offer, Dan. Thank you for doing that. So on that note, as we're wrapping up, as far as people reaching out to you and to have that conversation, to talk to you about anything we've talked about today or beyond, how do people connect with you, reach out to you?
So first of all, thank you for asking. I have a huge community on LinkedIn, and everything I do is with a mental health overview. So if you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, I'm there. If you want to reach out to me on Facebook, that's fine. Email, whatever the case may be. I'm not going to promote anything on this particular episode because I don't feel like it's the right place. But you can really find me pretty much anywhere. I'm a professional speaker. I work in humanity work. It used to be called DEI. So if you need resources, feel free to reach out. And it's not just relegated to the United States. Obviously, you're in Canada, but I have worked with people all across the world. And the one fundamental commonality is this mental health and these feelings and how you're going to do. So, you know, as redundant as it may be, if you're out there, you're not alone.
Love it. And we're going to have you more opportunities for the two of us to have more conversations beyond today, which I'm excited about. So there'll be links to back and forth through all the other places that we're going to have conversations. So, Dan, I just love I love how you, your spirit and how you present your thoughts and how you are truly caring about the person that's listening to this episode, that you have them in your mind as you're talking and you're framing everything to them so that they leave here after this conversation with tools and inspiration that they can use now. And I just love everything about how you present, because I think we need more voices like yours in the world to support men, fathers, you know, and to be an example to maybe those people who do not know what they do not know. To have you on here and share your thoughts has been amazing. So thank you for making time to do this with me. I appreciate it.
No, I loved it. Like, for you know, again, I'll use the same phrase that I have been. For those watching, you know, the first time I met Dave, I had the McKenzie brother background. We were talking. It's just, this gives me such joy, and I appreciate the compliments. I've been a professional speaker for a while, but the way that we're communicating has nothing to do with that. It has to communicate. This all has to do with just being a human. And I don't ever want somebody to go through exactly the same thing that I went through, because it was too horrifying. You know, what we didn't talk about on this podcast, I also have a eating disorder and body dysmorphia. I'm a domestic violence survivor and a sexual assault victim survivor. So, you know, all these things go into who you are and how you operate and how you respond to the world. And I'm here to be a voice, and I apologize for saying it this way, for the voiceless. And so I hope that today's episode gave somebody a voice.
Yeah. So Dan, make sure today you hug that family. And when you hear the daddy, daddy, daddies, that you makes you smile when you pause and go, I love the sound of that voice that's saying that right now. It might be inconvenient timing wise because I'm trying to get this other thing done while you're trying to get my attention. But that voice brings so much joy to hear that your kids say that and come running to you, wrap their arms around you, or acknowledge your presence. That's great as a dad. So enjoy those absolutely. Moments. Soak them in.
And my last word for any of those dads out there that are having girls, please remember, girls don't know you have nuts. Protect yourself, wear a cup.
That's definitely very important. Yes, thank you for bringing that up. I love it. That's great. Everyone, all the information for Dan will be in the show notes if you want to reach out to Dan. Thank him for his appearance on the show, or you want to talk to him, make sure you reach out to Dan and go check out his LinkedIn as well. So Dan, thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome.
Hey, thanks for listening to Dad Space today. I'm so thankful that you were here for this episode. If you like the show, please let another dad know. Hey, that kind of rhymed. Anyways, share the episode out with somebody in your circle who would love Dad Space. That means so much to us here, for our guests who donate their time to be on the show. And we just want to see this grow. So, again, another rhyme. Oh, wow. Anyhow, I think I need to write a song or something. Thank you for being here with Dad Space. And again, looking forward to the next episode. Look forward to having you here again with us. And if we can help you in any way, if you have a great guest idea for the show, a topic that you would love us to cover, we would love to do that here on Dad Space. So thanks for listening, and thanks for being part of the community. And to you, Dad, thank you for listening, and thank you for sharing Dad Space. Catch you on the next one. Take care.